Accession number 30411. Mr. Claude Stephen Jarrett. Now, so what happens next then? After the war's finished, what do you? Because you stay out there quite a bit longer, don't you?
After the war finished, we had to wind up. We had to close up a lot of things, and we had to go around the depots to give instructions how to and what to do, etc.
Now, what do you mean? What did you have to do? What did they have to do?
Put things into storage, dispose of some of the stuff that wasn't needed anymore, etc., etc. And I was to go down to Madras, and we had a depot just outside of Madras called Avadi, A-V-A-D-I, which was a large depot on the west, on the east side of India. And I went down and did what I was supposed to do, and then the colonel had allowed me a week's local leave before I was going home. And he sent me a message, a cipher, you know, military message, to say that my week's leave was cancelled because I was number 32 on the homeward bound trek. My number had come up. I was to come back to New Delhi to pack up and leave.
When was this?
This was in March, April of 46. And I was terribly upset because I had made all kinds of local arrangements to go to Cochin for a lovely swim in the ocean and enjoy myself for a week. And no, nothing doing. So I went back to New Delhi, packed up, and said goodbye to everybody, and including my girlfriend Monica, and left for the homeward bound trooping depot at Deolali, D-E-O-L-A-L-I. Do you know the name? And got there and was told that there wasn't a ship to England for 5, 6, or 7 weeks. And Deolali was as hot as hell, and all day long to do it in and nothing to do. It was a terrible place. And I met another chap there, another officer, and both of us felt that we didn't want to wait for a ship. And they asked us every day, is there anybody who wants to fly home? Well, flying home didn't enjoy a very good reputation because they had a number of crashes and people had been killed on the way home by the planes crashing. So we decided, he and I, that we'd go home by air, never mind waiting for the 5 or 6 or 7 weeks for the ship to come. We didn't know. They didn't tell us exactly how long. And so I signed his papers for him as having been vaccinated and inoculated and so on, and he signed mine, and the next day we decided to volunteer. Of course, we hadn't been inoculated and vaccinated, but that didn't matter to us. And so we left for Karachi, where they assembled the flights home.
And when would this be, April?
No, May. May of
46.
And arriving there, we spent a day or so, and then they had a crew and a plane and enough men to make up a flight. And the flight was 25 men and, I forget, crew of 2 or 3 airmen and a ex-Coastal Command bomber plane. And I discovered to my horror that I was in charge of the entire thing, being the senior most officer.
You were a major by then, weren't you?
Nope.
No, captain. Or sorry,
captain. Captain of Royal Engineers, SORE 3, Staff Officer Royal Engineers, 3rd grade. And we flew off. The first place we stopped was Shaiba, outside Basra. And the second place we stopped at was then Palestine, now Israel. And we stayed at a place called the Telovitsky Camp, which was outside of Tel Aviv. And from there we went off to Libya. Where did we stay in Libya? God, I forgot.
Just a method.
And then...
Were you enjoying the farm? It's quite an experience going to all these places.
Yeah, but you know you had to do the thing because I didn't want to spend 6 weeks sitting there waiting and then 4 weeks or 5 weeks to travel home. And so all I can say is that we finally got to England in beginning of May 46. We landed at Waterbeach, which is just outside Cambridge. And the first thing that the government presented me with was a very substantial bill, because I had a fur coat for a girlfriend that I brought, or for my parents, or I forget for who, with me, and the fur coat was taxable, and the first thing is they wanted to collect the tax. So that was that. And then, after my allowance for overseas service, etc., expired in September of 46, after I was demobbed, and that's when army pay stopped. Now and then they gave me...
Were you demobilized straight away when you got back then, in May?
No, not... I think it was early June or something. Took time, you know, for the documentation to...
And what was the demobilization process? What do you remember of it?
Oh, nothing. Don't remember much. I got a suit and some shoes or something, I forget what, and had to hand in some of the documentation, and I had to get rid of my gun, and I forget the details. It's too long ago. All I can tell you is that the government allowed me to finish my studies, and they paid a subsistence allowance till June of 47.
So you went back to college?
Regent Polly School of Architecture. Went back. And I went back to finish it and to finish the course. And the course was supposed to go on till Christmas of 47. But they didn't pay any subsistence for the summer. And so I was one of about, I don't know, 10 or 12 returned soldiers who wanted to finish the course before the summer break. And so we went to the principal and asked that the course for us be set so that we could take the finals in the summer and not have to go through for the longer period. And the entire staff, entire student body was ex-troops and some officers and some other ranks and so on. And we all had problems settling down to being students again. And a lot of the people couldn't take it.
Now tell me, that's acclimatizing to being a civilian again, isn't
yeah.
it? How did you manage it?
It was difficult, I tell you. I managed it, but it was not the easiest thing to do.
What did you find difficult?
Well, to listen to the lecturers and to learn the beginnings of back in studies, in student, being a student. I mean, I'd been in the army 6 years, from 40 to 46, and my whole setup hadn't been oriented towards this sort of thing. So I had difficulties, it was a problem, and a lot of the boys dropped out by Christmas out of the year. We lost quite a large number of students between September and Christmas who resigned because they couldn't stick with it. And
you qualified as an architect then, or you know,
in the summer I qualified.
We don't really go much further, but can you just fill us in? You had a career as an architect, didn't you?
Yeah, complete career. And I finished my finals. I was accepted. The studies were okay. We had an all day exam to finish the course and do the final. And I'm sorry, I'm going to move this.
Tell me about your career as an architect then.
Well, I finished the course in June and joined my father's office the day after I finished. And he was working as an architect at the time and was very happy with my assistance in the office. And I had met during the war here a woman who I had thought we could get married, but when I came back, I realized right away that wasn't for me, and we stopped soon after. And I had a great medical problem because during the last stay in New Delhi, the army had told me that I've got impacted wisdom teeth and they have to come out, and they did some x-rays, gave me the x-rays to bring to London. And when I was here, just after arrival, I went to the military hospital at Millbank or wherever it was, maybe still is, I don't know, and showed them the x-rays, and they said, yes, they have to come out. And two dentists took out the wisdom teeth.
Yeah.
And I had a hell of a time because they left half the teeth in, and they very poorly extracted and also broke part of my jaw, which, of course, I didn't know. And for the next 6 weeks, I had face like this, and terrible. Anyway, it finally cost me £50 to go and see a specialist in Harley Street who took out the bits and pieces.
Now, do you want to sum up your architectural career, or should we just leave it at that?
No, I can sum up the architectural career very quickly. I eventually married a woman who was divorced and had a child in the summer of 49. And
so you're working for your father then?
I was working for Dad. And at the time, my father had a partner, and the three of us decided that one of us should maybe go and see what it's like in the States or Canada or Australia. Well, then we looked into Australia, and it was a bit too far away, really. You couldn't get there quickly or anything else, and it was far. So we then decided Canada offers recognition of English architectural exams, fully recognized and qualified. So we decided Canada will be it. So I applied for emigration to Canada in the spring of 1950 and left after I got a visa. And my wife stayed here with our son. She had the son from the first marriage. I had adopted him, so he was our son. And in Canada, I arrived, I think it was May, and I had a ticket from Montreal to Vancouver. And
so that's where you settled and established your practice?
Not quite. And I went on a trip from Montreal to Vancouver, I got 5, 6, 7 offers of employment in every city that I stayed in, everywhere, and they were looking for architects in the worst way, qualified architects everywhere. The building activity was incredible. So finally, in Vancouver, I decided that the economic heart of Canada was Toronto. And I went back to Toronto and worked for a firm that had given me a temporary job when I first got there, and went back to them, stayed with them 2 years, and left them after 2 years. And they built particularly hospitals, and I was in charge of one of the big hospitals on the East Coast in St. Stephen, New Brunswick, which I designed and which was built, and still active today. And then I finally left them and got other employment, and in 1955 started working for a firm called Page and Steele. And then my father sent me a telegram in 55 saying that he'd got cancer and would I either come back to take his practice over or come back and sell his practice if I want to stay in Canada. And my boss said to me, come back here and you'll become a partner in our office. And this is what finally happened. I went back, sold the practice here for my father, went back to Canada and became a partner in Page and Steele, and retired from their office as a partner in 1988.
And you stayed in Canada. I mean, you're over here on a visit. Can I just ask, have you ever visited Germany or ever felt the need to visit Germany?
Yes, I did. I tell you what, I visited Germany some 9 years ago.
So that was the first time?
First time ever, on invitation of the mayor of Berlin.
And how did you find it? I mean, it's so long since you, I mean, you'd emigrated as a small boy in 1933, and this is, 67 years later. So how did you find it?
Very strange. I'll tell you, it caused strange and peculiar emotions to see again the flats that we had. There were two flats we had lived in with my parents.
They were still there.
They were still there. And I went to see the school where I had been, and it had been destroyed by the war, as I told you, and group of small buildings were there instead, small, not the big building of a high school. And
how did you find the Germans? I mean, I know you're German, but you're not really now, are you? I mean,
no.
Did you feel any empathy with them? Did you find them still anti-Semitic?
No, not really. Not nearly as one might expect, but it was really, I didn't feel at home or anything like that. Nothing at all. I could tell you that any feeling towards being there or having been there or having, other than just, yes, I stayed there. I had one funny experience. My grandparents, my father's parents, lived in a big block of flats that they had built, and the grandfather died in 1932, and as a small boy I took my grandmother to Czechoslovakia, and I used to be in that building quite a bit to see the grandparents. I went into that building, and the funniest experience I had was that the smell in the staircase going up to their apartment was still the same. That was the most peculiar, strange experience I had in Berlin.
Do you feel most at home in Canada now, I presume?
100%. Absolutely. And we come here, usually my wife and I, twice a year. My first wife died in 89. I remarried in 94 to a woman I had met here, German Jewish refugee.
Do you feel reasonably at home in England as well when you visit?
Yes, because my sister lives here and I have cousins here. But I feel at home to that extent. But to live here permanently, out of question.
Toronto for you.
Toronto is my home. That's where I will live, and that's where I'll die.
Thank you very much.